This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being with us today, 91.9 and Harrisonburg's 95.1. I love topics of this sort as we're going to have today. You know, things that make you realize just how important topics and concerns that are so easily overlooked can be, such as our free speech. Josh Wheeler here. Josh, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
I appreciate you taking your time to come in. Josh Wheeler is the director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Josh, isn't there an easier, tidier, shorter name than that?
Yeah, I think it's the longest nonprofit name in the country, certainly the state. We refer to ourselves as the TJ Center.
The TJ Center, always watching out for everyone's right to free speech. Do you have anything to do with the chalk wall down on Charlotte Hills downtown mall?
Oh, we built it. That was a Thomas Jefferson Center project. Took about 7 years from conception to dedication. But yeah, no, we are the people responsible for that, which will either delight or inspire hatred amongst your radio listeners.
And now, for those who are outside of the more local area, because we do play in Harrisonburg and down in Lynchburg, Amherst, and even into Richmond and up to Culpeper, a little more explanation about what that is?
Sure. Well, it's interesting that we have so many monuments in this country, but if you think about it, for the most part, they're dedicated to events or they're dedicated to people. There are very few monuments in the country that are dedicated to ideas. The Statue of Liberty is an example of one, the Civil Rights Memorial, and we thought time had come that we should have a monument to one of the fundamental principles that this country was founded on, the First Amendment. And so we had a concept competition about, oh, Lord, it's not 10 years ago. It was maybe 15 years ago, in which we asked people, what should a monument to free speech look like? And we received about 40 entries, all of them very interesting, but the overwhelming favorite of the committee, and the committee was made up of a group of citizens from the Charlottesville Albemarle community, was what we call the community chalkboard and podium. And there are essentially two components to this monument. One is a raised platform, a modern-day soapbox, on which people can speak to either impromptu crowds, just stand up and do it, or planned rallies and programs, and we've had a lot of both of those. Or, and what most people know, is there is a giant chalkboard, 7.5 feet tall by 42 feet long, and actually add another 12 feet onto that because there are two sections of it, and it's double-sided, on which people can write in chalk anything they want. And this is located right outside of Charlottesville City Hall. So there's also been a lot of comments to our local elected officials. And we dedicated this monument over in 2006. And it has remained filled with comments ever since. We have to clean it off several times a week in order to make room for new comments, but it just constantly gets filled. And the expression on the monument, like free speech generally, runs from the sublime to the ridiculous. It's all sorts of every kind of free speech you can imagine.
Now we're going to be talking about free speech, the muzzles, which makes me think of making someone shut up. But is it qualified at the monument to go and erase what someone else put and right over it?
Yes, it is. Although we hope people won't do that. But one thing people often don't understand, not people, but a lot of people don't understand, is that the First Amendment doesn't limit, doesn't say we have the right to express ourselves on any subject at any time in any manner possible. What the First Amendment says is that the government cannot restrict our right to censorship. We censor each other all the time, and I think we would be very upset if we didn't do that. We debate over what can be said, what can't be said. If somebody comes into your home and starts spouting a lot of, let's say, racist speech that you don't like, you have every right to throw them out of your house. And the First Amendment monument reflects that. It's an ongoing debate. People can respond to something they see on the monument by either writing a response, or if they think it's inappropriate, they can erase it and write over it.
So again, Josh Wheeler here. He is the director at the TJ Center, the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. He's here today to tell us about the 2013 muzzles. A little bit, real quickly, what those awards in air quotes represent, and then we'll get to the first one.
Sure. We give award the Jefferson muzzles every April, around the time of Thomas Jefferson's birthday, to what we consider to be some of the more egregious or ridiculous acts of affronts to free speech that have occurred in the prior year.
And then, again, these must come from some sort of governmental agency if you're not giving them to me for erasing someone else's thoughts on the chalk monument downtown.
For the most part, that's correct. However, we don't limit ourselves with the muzzles to specific First Amendment violations all the time. Every once in a while, there is a private act of censorship that we think is so ridiculous that it deserves the dubious distinction of a muzzle.
Are there any in this year's that fall into that
well,
category?
Well, there are kind of some, there's some quasi ones. For example, the National Party conventions that both received a muzzle. Technically, it's unclear whether that would be considered government action or not.
Well, let's start on that.
Okay.
As the first one of nine that were given out this year, nine muzzles. Muzzle awards. Mm-hmm. Is that what it is? Is it an award?
Well, they're called the Jefferson Muzzles, Jefferson Muzzle Awards.
Okay.
It's actually a registered trademark, believe it or not.
What do they call the, I think they're called the Razzberries?
The Razzies. They call them the Razzies.
Razzies is sort of the negative form of the Oscars.
Yes.
All right. So there's nine this year. Josh Wheeler, director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression, the 2013 Muzzles. And we're going to start with the one at the Democratic and Republican National Convention. Tell us.
Right. Well, this one it's actually two sides of the same coin. And what I think is very important from this muzzle that the feature that I hope a lot of people will realize is that free speech is a nonpartisan issue, or if you want to put it another way, censorship is a bipartisan issue. It doesn't have a common political origin. People on the left, just as well as people on the right, can be great heroes of free speech as well as infringe upon free speech. And the two national conventions this year were just a perfect example of that. And they both did essentially the same thing, which was to ignore and silence, muzzle the votes of about half of their own convention delegates. In the case of the Democratic convention, there was a motion to change the Democratic platform. The specifics aren't that important, but for the purposes of free speech, but to explain real quickly, the platform had you might remember the controversy that the platform no longer recognized, as it had in the past, Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, and it had no references to God in its platform. And that generated a lot of controversy and a lot of backlash, and the parties that be at the National Committee decided, let's change that very quickly, and they put it up for a vote. Well, it had to pass by 2/3, and they put it up by a voice vote, and it was clear they did the first voice vote. There was no way it was 2/3. It was 50-50 at most. So
and this is being done on television.
This is being done
maybe
live.
Not at the 8 p.m. version.
Right.
But all this is on C-SPAN or some other form
of
television.
And in fact, if you go to our website, we have a link to video that shows this actually taking place. So it was about 50-50. The chairman at the time of who's taking the vote, counting it, obviously looked befuddled, didn't know what to do. So he decided, well, I'll take a second vote. He took a second vote. It was even clearer that it was 50-50, certainly not two-thirds. And then he got a word in the ear from somebody who was obviously from the committee. So he took a third vote. Again, 50-50. But this time, they just state, in the opinion of the committee, we have passed by a two-thirds margin. I mean, it was so ridiculous that it was just a perfect example of where the powers that be are deciding that they're going to make the rules the way they want them, and the heck with whatever the voters have to say. In this case, it was half the convention delegates, so they were effectively muzzled. Now, at the Republican convention, it was sort of a similar thing, only they were much, much more to the point, very quickly to the point. There were a number of inter-procedural rules that the Romney campaign wanted adopted, which would be, you know, really go to the favor of the Romney campaign or the front-running candidate, allow them much more control over the convention process. And these rules were very much opposed by the Ron Paul delegation, or people supporting Ron Paul. They took a vote. It sounded very, again, a voice vote. It sounded very clear, but Speaker John Boehner, Speaker of the House John Boehner, who was chairman at the time, announced that the ayes had it, even though it was almost impossible to tell whether the ayes or the nays had it. But what was particularly interesting in this case is, even before the vote was taken, the teleprompter comes up and people were taking photos of it showing that the ayes have it. And so the talk about a preordained conclusion to a vote. So again, the voice of those Republican delegates were muzzled.
Talking with Josh Wheeler, he's the director at the TJ Center. They have released the 2013 muzzles having to do with our First Amendment rights here in the United States. 11:13 here on the Wake Up Call.
Support for WNRN today comes from Italian Villa, Charlottesville's old school diner at Emmett and Ivy. Before the game or after church, the Villa serves a full American breakfast all day. You can find burgers and specialty sandwiches for lunch, plus weekday lunch specials and an Italian dinner menu every night. That's Italian Villa, 129 Emmett Street North. Support for WNRN is brought to you by Atlantic Organic Natural Sleep Shop, featuring their natural and chemical-free organic sleep studio with environmentally conscious mattresses and bedding, including eco-friendly hardwood platform beds. That's Atlantic Organic, 421 West Main Street, Charlottesville. Website AtlanticOrganicSleepShop.com. It's bedtime naturally. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks again for listening to WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. This is Independent Music Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Josh Wheeler here with me today. The 2013 Muzzles. About giving to folks and entities that diminish our First Amendment rights.
Or at least in the previous year took an action that we feel is either a particularly egregious or ridiculous affront to free speech. One thing I'd like to stress just a second, Rick, is we're not saying that these are bad people, and we're not saying that we're taking a stand on the political issues that may be involved. All we are saying is that in this instance, they made a very bad decision in terms of free speech, that they failed to give the proper weight to or consideration of the principles of free speech in the making of the decision that they did.
We're going to move along to some of the others, Josh. When you were talking about what happened at the Democratic Republican National Conventions, and you said that by ignoring what appeared to be an honest voice vote in both occasions, you said, heck with whatever that was. Well, heck seems to apply to one of the other muzzles that was here about a high school student and her graduation speech.
That is the best segue I've ever heard. That's terrific. Yeah, we have to move out to Oklahoma for this one. And we gave this to the Prague High School principal, David Smith. The class valedictorian was asked to give a speech, as most class valedictorians are, at the commencement ceremony. And she, in making her speech, changed one word from that, to where she asked herself, she posed a question to herself in the speech, asking herself, what are you going to do after graduation? What are you going to do? And the people were always asking her this. And she originally had planned to say, how the heck should I know, answering it? Well, in the course of the enthusiasm and the moment, excitement of the moment, she changed that to say, well, how the hell should I know what I'm going to do? And for that one word, that one transition, this is probably the best student in the high school in terms of academic performance and such. The principal overreacted, we feel, was a gross overreaction, and refused to give the student her diploma until she apologized, wrote a letter of apology not only to him, but to the school board and to all of her teachers. We just felt that that was just a gross overreaction to what can at most be considered a minor transgression, if in fact you feel she did anything wrong at all.
And one of the other topics, by the way, go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's a certain irony to this as well, because this particular high school, it's the home of the, quote, Red Devils was their mascot. And they also had as a little logo, this little impish devil as their symbolic logo. So it seems a little ironic that referring to Hades in that other apparently vulgar term or offensive way would earn this poor student the loss of her diploma.
Yeah, that's actually where I was going. That made me snicker when I'm going. In fact, you can go online and read all these in greater detail that we might get into today. But you can also see there's a couple videos for some of these different muzzles that have been given out, some photos, certainly a picture of the icon that's related to the that one's at the Prague, Oklahoma High School. You can see the devil that they have on all their uniforms, etc. You can go online, www.tjcenter.org. Josh Wheeler here with us. He's the director at the TJ Center, Thomas Jefferson Center for Protection of Free Expression. So the Oklahoma County High School gets a muzzle for that. But they're not the only one even in that state.
No. Oklahoma did a double whammy this year. The other... So I'm sorry to laugh. I've been working with these things for several months, and yet they still, some of them make me laugh. The Oklahoma City Public Schools, or the Board of Education for Oklahoma City Public Schools, had a policy in which students could only wear to school sports memorabilia, clothing that had sports memorabilia, logo, team logos, that kind of thing. Only if it was apparel that had logos or emblems of Oklahoma colleges or universities. No other college or university could have this. Well, this 5-year-old kid is a huge University of Michigan fan, and he wore the University of Michigan t-shirt to school one day. And he was greatly embarrassed and humiliated when he was called out by the teachers and when they were out on the playground and told to go over behind a tree and turn his shirt inside out because it violated this policy. What was really interesting is one thing that listeners may be interested in knowing is we write to all of our potential recipients before we award the muzzles. And we say, look, this is what we believe to have happened, but we know we may not have all the facts, and would welcome the opportunity to hear from you and hear your side of this. And that sometimes does provide us with information that, if it doesn't exculpate what they did, it certainly mitigates, and they don't get a muzzle. But I have to say, most of the time, the letters will say something along the lines, we are firm believers in free speech and we don't believe in censorship of any kind. However, and then they just start digging the hole deeper. They just start going on and on and justifying their act of censorship. In this case, we got a letter back from a representative of the school board stating that the reason for this policy was student safety and that they feared that the emblems of other colleges could be perceived as gang colors. And therefore, they weren't going to allow them. But then they said to us in the letter that they knew at the time that there were no gangs associated, apparently, with the two main state colleges. The problem is the policy applies to all of the colleges, I think 27 in Oklahoma. And so that's basically a virtual Crayola box of colors and gang violence. And that was their justification for making this poor little 5-year-old kid turn his T-shirt inside out. Follow up to the story, University of Michigan heard of this. They invite the kid and his parents up to Michigan for a football game. At halftime, he comes out onto the field, you know, before 50,000 some fans.
100,000.
Really? Is it that big?
In Michigan, yeah.
Yeah. And they award him his own specially made Michigan sweatshirt, which was that if he was ever forced to take it off and turn it inside out, it actually had Michigan logo inside and outside, perfectly visible. So a happy ending for that young man.
Again, that happens in Oklahoma City. That just makes me laugh so much because the phrasing coming up about potential gangs and gang colors for the 5-year-old kindergarten kid.
Right. Yeah, there's
so
a fairly tough kindergarten.
Being put on the color yeah. So he's the one who doesn't get bothered as he, you know, tracks guns or drugs from one right. part of the neighborhood to another. Nobody's going right. to going to stop the 5-year-old yeah. kid. Let's put him put him on the route.
Well, I don't know, Rick. Maybe the Oklahoma kindergartens are a lot tougher than the kindergartens I'm used to. But yeah, I would suspect that he was fairly safe. And more importantly, no one ever. This was the first time we ever heard of this gang. This rule being based on some concern out of gang violence. So,
Josh Wheeler here. He's the director at the TJ Center, talking about the 2013 muzzles. Having to do with First Amendment rights. Josh, a quick follow-up to the young man, the 5-year-old, in his University of Michigan sweatshirt. I believe on your center, the website, tjcenter.org, there was something in the story that said that there was public reaction to the incident was swift and overwhelming.
Right.
Now, was that inside the state of Oklahoma or strictly outside the state looking in?
I think it would seem to be both. I think everybody very quickly recognized that this was sort of ridiculous. And the Oklahoma School Board did say, Board of Education said, well, we'll have to review this policy. But to date, they have not changed it. The policy is still there.
All right, 11:24 on the wake-up call, talking about the 2013 muzzles. And like you, it's... sort of makes me snicker in one sense, and it sort of makes me cringe in another. Let's move on to one, and I know I'm going to pronounce this incorrectly, the Anvil-Cleona Pennsylvania
yes.
School Board that's, about a book.
That's right. And this is one that you really do, I hope people will go to the website, because in this case, a picture, it really is worth 1,000 words. There was a book, a children's illustrated book in the elementary school library that was called The Dirty Cowboy. And it's this charming little story of a cowboy who rides into town, but he wants to for the first time in a long time, he's been out working, you know, and he decides to take a bath to clean himself up, to make himself look more presentable. And so he goes down to the river and takes his clothes off, and he asks his dog, his faithful companion, to watch his clothes and don't let anything happen to him or don't let anybody steal them. Now, when I say he takes his clothes off, this is all inferred, if you will, or implied, but people infer that he's taken his clothes off because you never see him throughout the story very cleverly what we consider, say, his private parts, are always blocked from view. You never see them. You know, the artist
has done a very
clever,
right, cartoonish way,
exactly,
of not showing things that you typically wouldn't show.
Right. So really, we don't know if he's got underpants on or not. But the clear implication is that he doesn't. But there's a big frog, for example, in the foreground blocking one picture. There's a lot of dust, wind blocking
another.
Right.
The book is called The Dirty Cowboy,
exactly.
Not The Naked Cowboy.
Not The Naked Cowboy, but he really is. Well. One child's parent thought that this was a very dangerous book because it could teach children that looking at nude people is okay, and therefore looking at pornography could be deemed okay and sanctioned by the school. Well, every parent has the right to believe what they want to believe and take appropriate steps in regards to their children. But they made a complaint to the school board, which then endorsed their view and had the book removed. Now, this isn't a huge school district, but over 300 parents, citizens, taxpayers from the area signed an online petition saying, "We've seen this book. This is ridiculous. You know, this is teaching a far worse lesson than anything they could get from looking at this really perfectly innocent book." But the school board held firm, made a couple of references to one school board official said something about, well, how would you like it if I brought Hustler into the school, elementary school, comparing these two together. And so our position on this was that the school board really deserved the muzzle, because it's one thing to let one parent decide what all the students and families can read is just ridiculous, as opposed to working with that parent and that family to make arrangements that their own child couldn't see this particular book. But everybody involved, professional librarians, and thought this was a very charming, a very cute book. And it, in fact, went on to win several awards.
Josh Wheeler here. We're talking about the 2013 muzzles having to do with awarding groups, entities, people for, I guess, again, use your phrase best, Josh. You're giving the alties for... Yeah. I'm going to say stamping down on our, you know, but it's not quite the same thing.
Either we say for affronts, either particularly serious or ridiculous affronts to free speech.
Now, this particular book we were talking about, The Dirty Cowboy, the school board in this particular area says, nope, that book's not, we're going to take that out because it does meet these evil standards,
right,
of letting kids see naked people in the wrong way. But part of the, I don't know, I think I read this on the site, on the specific TJCenter.org site. There are also some comments, so I don't want to say that this came from the TJ Center, although I'm sure you can answer this, is that one of the reasons that was given for not removing the book was because it had won several awards, several good awards, quality of the book, the writer, the artist, etc. But what happens if a book receives awards from a muzzle type group, the American Family Association, or others? What happens in that sense, in terms of a muzzle being given out? You know, if the American Family Association gives an award as saying great book, even though it may be the wrong type from other parents who don't want their kids to read that.
Well, we would support the librarians in this. It's a real issue here, in our view, and you're getting to the heart of what can be a very difficult and a very tough issue, which is that parents should be involved in their children's education. Parents should express their concerns about particular what's being taught or what's not being taught. What we find fault with here is how the school board addressed that. Here was a, in our opinion, a perfectly innocuous book, but that is a matter of opinion. And that's what you're getting at. There is a matter of opinion. And one child's parents thought that this book was inappropriate. To us, though, the answer to that situation is not to remove the book completely and denying it to all of the families whose children go to school in there, but that there is a better solution, a better way to handle that. Think of the lesson that this is telling the kids. This is essentially what we call the heckler's veto. And that's if one person out of 1,000 objects to something, okay, they get to veto it for everybody.
Yeah, yell loud enough.
Exactly.
And you get your way.
And in this case, what would have been more appropriate is to really, if these parents were so involved, was just to simply say not to let their child have this book, or perhaps set up a policy that any parent could say, I don't want my child to have this book, or without prior approval, we don't want our children to be checking out these books. But in this case, what happened was one member of the community objected to a book, and the overwhelming majority, if not everybody but this parents, supported this book. And excuse me. And we felt that it's wrong to allow one person to dominate what for everybody, all the families, what can be available in the libraries. And again, remember, the librarian in this case, this is a professional who is trained in viewing and assessing these sorts of books and what's appropriate for their school. And they of course, perfectly endorsed this book. They had selected it.
All right, 11:32 here on the Wake Up Call, talking with Josh Wheeler. He's the director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression.
And support for WNRN today comes from the Markets of Tiger Fuel Company, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. WNRN thanks Jess Curry for their support of independent music radio. Jess Curry is at 425 East Main Street on Charlottesville's downtown mall. Jess Curry serves Indo-Caribbean curries with vegetarian options Monday through Saturday, now open for dinner on Friday. You can find Jess Curry on Facebook.
Hi, my name is Joanne Bricker from the Monticello Bird Club. We are an informal group of local birding enthusiasts who gather to share their love of birds and the natural world. We meet monthly from September through June in the Education Building at Ivy Creek Natural Area to exchange news and learn from an invited guest speaker. The Bird Club sponsors numerous field trips led by experienced birders to Virginia birding hotspots. On the first Saturday of every month, a club member leads a bird walk at Ivy Creek Natural Area. Attendance at any of these events is open to both members and non-members of all skill levels. For details about MBC, MonticelloBirdClub.org. I'm Joanne, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And here we are. I'm Rick Moore, host of the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call here on WNRN. Thanks for listening on what appears to be turning into a very nice Sunday morning. By the way, don't forget your mother coming up next week. Buy your card, get your gifts, prepare yourself for the long phone call. We'll be having guests next week of mothers of all types, young mothers, trying to get a grandmother. I'll be calling my mother. You know, I'm sure it'll all be quite entertaining next Sunday on the Wake Up Call. Everybody likes to listen to somebody else's call to their mother. Our guest today, Josh Wheeler, we are talking about the 2013 muzzles. Josh, quick follow-up. The couple of the ones that we just covered all had to do with public school systems.
Yes.
Is that a regular feature on the muzzles as far back as you can go?
Yes, it is. In fact, we could easily award all the muzzles to incidents that occurred in public schools, and that's understandable if you think about it, because public schools, we're talking about people's children, and censorship, if you think about it, is really very paternalistic in that it's people saying it's not. You don't often hear people saying, you shouldn't be allowed to say that because I don't want to hear it or I can't hear it. They're usually saying, you shouldn't be allowed to say that because other people shouldn't be allowed to hear. It's very paternalistic. Well, in the case of public education, it really is paternalistic because people are talking about their children and protecting their children. And that's understandable. But at the same time, we have to remember that these kids are being taught a lesson by these actions. And a lot of the time, the school officials who I have the greatest sympathy for are faced with these very difficult decisions. But in our view, that they often do not give proper consideration to the First Amendment, to the free principles of free speech. And so what's the lesson they're teaching their kid, these kids, when they make these sort of decisions, is that, well, you know what, free speech really isn't all that important. And I have to tell you, the muzzles that keep me awake at night, that I worry about, are these, because these are really good people trying to do the best, but and they've got so many different constituencies that they have to answer to, parents, school boards, and then if they make the wrong decision, they've got people like us or the ACLU coming in and admonishing them. So these are really, they're really trying to make, their intentions are, I think, almost always good, but in these instances that we cite, we feel as if they've made the wrong decision or it's particularly egregious. But I just would point out that for every one that we give a muzzle to, we probably could have found 20 different. We could have also cited 20 different incidents as well.
Well, let's jump to a couple of the, when we talk about constituencies, let's jump to some of the political ones.
Okay.
One of the ones that caught my attention, certainly with the current debate that's ongoing, Missouri State Rep. Mike Liara?
That's correct. All right, now let me make this clear. This is about gun control. But the muzzle has nothing to do with gun control. It has to do with speech about gun control. The Missouri State Legislator, Mike Liara, introduced a bill that would make it a felony for a state lawmaker merely to propose any piece of legislation that, quote, further restricts the right of an individual to bear arms as set forth under the Second Amendment, close quote. So what he's saying is it's a felony even to talk about gun control. It's a completely unworkable provision, by the way, because you don't know what violates the First Amendment or the Second Amendment until a court tells us what violates it. So essentially what he's saying is if you propose a law that violates the Second Amendment, well, you don't know it's going to violate the Second Amendment until the law is passed and then a court hears a challenge to it. So it's a ridiculous law in the first place. But it's just this larger principle where a state legislator wants to propose a bill in which other state legislators who have a different point of view on a subject are committing a felony if they express that point of view in the state legislature.
I liked, again, tjcenter.org. You can read more detailed information about each one of these 2013 muzzles. One of the things that caught my attention was, again, I don't know who wrote the information following the topic, but it says that, again, the concern is about the topic of gun control, the conversation in this case, not the gun control itself.
Right.
And it says in there somewhere about both sides have the same goal, which is reducing gun violence, just
right.
Different methods of getting to that goal. And in this case, State Rep. Mike Liara, and he says, there's a quote in there somewhere about how he knew that this wasn't going to go through. He
right.
knew this wasn't a real possibility, but that was his way of promoting his thought on the process.
That's exactly right. But unfortunately, our view is that he wants to use the Second Amendment to put a bullet through the heart of the First Amendment by proposing a bill where you can't even talk about altering anything that might be a restriction. If we had the same bill, proposed the same bill about the First Amendment, he'd be guilty of a felony. But you raise a good, excellent point. Again, I just want to emphasize is we are these muzzles and these issues. A lot of people have responded to this particular muzzle who are very much strong Second Amendment believers in the Second Amendment. We don't have any quarrel with that. We don't. The Thomas Jefferson Center does not take a position on the issue of gun control. This isn't about that. This is about speech about gun control.
11:41 on the Wake Up Call. Our guest, Josh Wheeler. He is the director at the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Gave out their 2013 muzzles about 3 weeks ago.
Right, middle of April.
Josh down here as we go through some of them. And we talk about difficult discussions out
right
there. Well, certainly same-sex marriage,
yes,
has been one. And you had various, I didn't even write them all down, there were four or five different
right
political representatives in some way or another who received a muzzle regarding their actions on the same-sex marriage debate.
Exactly. And it's really two sides of the same coin here. You folks may recall, your listeners may recall, I think it was last summer, when in an interview, the president of Chick-fil-A was asked a question about gay marriage. And as many people know who've tried to purchase Chick-fil-A on a Sunday, Chick-fil-A is a Christian-owned franchise, and they choose not to be on Sunday, recognizing that as a Christian day of rest. Perfectly entitled to that.
6 days of work,
that's
one
right
day of rest.
The President Cathy, that's his name, of the Chick-fil-A, expressed his view that he thought that the Bible endorsed and defined marriage as a union between a man and a woman. Well, this invoked this huge controversy. And a lot of several mayors, most notably Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, but a couple of others, Thomas Marino of Boston, expressed the view that that kind of position was discriminatory, and therefore they were going to use the power of their office to prohibit Chick-fil-A's expansion within their cities. In one case, it was to block a specific a Chick-fil-A that had been proposed through zoning ordinances, etc. You get the idea. Well, you just can't do that. In the first place, it would... What the Chick-fil-A, there's no evidence that Chick-fil-A had actually engaged in any discriminatory practices towards gay people. There's no evidence of all this. So this was a reaction simply to a man expressing his opinion. Now, just to show and really to illustrate that this is a speech issue and not a position on gay marriage, there was a state legislator from Maryland who, when there's a Baltimore Ravens player, and I forget his name, but it's on the website, who came out and was a very strong advocate for gay marriage. Well, this Maryland legislator was very upset about this, and he wrote a letter to the owner of the Baltimore Ravens stating that he should do whatever's necessary, essentially, to stop this man from speaking out on this very sensitive issue, that it wasn't his place to do so.
I think I dropped a little bit out of the middle of the quote, but, quote, take the necessary action to inhibit such expressions from your employee.
From your employee, that's right. Basically, bringing the power. And he wrote this on Maryland legislature. This wasn't a private act. He wrote this on his official stationery. He wrote it in his text. He says, as a Maryland state representative, I'm writing you on this. So essentially, the exact opposite of what Rahm Emanuel and these other mayors did. This guy is expressing a concern about an endorsement of gay marriage. In both of these cases, in both sides of this coin, Democrat, Republican, actually these were all Democrats, I'm sorry, conservative, liberal, I guess, you know, progressive, non-progressive, whatever labels you want to put on it. But on the issue of gay marriage, it showed both sides, and in both sides, they were showed increased intolerance for the discussion of gay marriage and the propriety of it. Again, we don't take a position, the center, on the issue of gay marriage. We may have our own personal feelings about it. I personally would say that I'm I think it's a violation of the Equal Protection Clause not to deny, people the right to wed. But that doesn't enter into this discussion.
All right, we got a caller real quick. Caller, I don't wish to diminish your rights to speak, but we got a couple more to get over in our next 15 minutes. So you have a question for our guest?
I do. Thank you, Rick. So this is going back to school districts. Now, there are certain school districts in conservative portions of our country where the school board may adopt a textbook that teaches creationism. And you hear about this all the time. There's a single family that protests this and says, you know, you're teaching bad science in schools, or you're not teaching science in schools, and they work to get those textbooks removed. Now, this sounds like a free speech issue where a community has said, this is what we want to teach, and a single family is coming forward and saying, no, we want the truth to be taught in our schools. We feel our children are being held back by not being taught the full science. In an issue like this, where would the Thomas Jefferson Center come forward? Would you support the school board who only wants to teach creationism, or would you support the family who wants to have science taught in schools?
Thanks, Sean. I'm gonna let Josh talk, okay?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I want to thank you too, Sean, for raising what's an excellent, excellent question and an incredibly difficult one to answer. To specifically answer your question, what position we would take, it would really depend upon the particular facts of that case. And so I can't really speak to that because this is a legally very nuanced issue. But I will try to address it in some general terms that hopefully would help. The problem with the creationism debate is now we're getting over into another part of the First Amendment that the Thomas Jefferson Center doesn't involve itself, which is the religious clauses of the First Amendment. And this is the whole idea of separation of church and state, you know, the establishment of the Establishment Clause, which says that the Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. And that's been interpreted as creating a wall between church and state. Now, a lot of the time, the court actions on creationism have ruled on that provision in terms of striking down the teaching of creationism on the grounds that it's not really science, but it's teaching a particular religious point of view. So if the court action is on that, which most of the challenges have been on that grounds, then the center would probably not take a position on it because it's not really striking it down for First Amendment free speech, but it's getting into this area of the Establishment Clause. And this is a very tricky issue because it does now sort of bring two provisions of the First Amendment into conflict. Free speech on the one hand versus the Establishment Clause on the other. And I'm sorry, I'm going to give too much time on that one right now. But
that's what you need to come back on another show for.
Okay, I'd be happy to. But the fact is we do endorse people's right to believe in creationism and express it. But it gets in this very difficult issue of whether it's being challenged on science grounds or religious grounds, et cetera. Very, very confusing, very nuanced.
And you can go to the TJ Center website, tjcenter.org, and there's much more to it than just reading what the muzzles are this year or archives from past years. And Josh, we'll have you back on. I'll get some professors from UVA, and we'll talk a little bit more about that kind of topic.
Sure, be happy to, because that was an inadequate answer, but it is.
Sean should have called it like 11:10 to ask that question. All right, Sean, apologies for not getting into greater detail, but we will do that show in the future. 11:50 here on the Wake Up Call. We got three more muzzles to do. Be right back.
And support on WNRN comes from Price Hyundai on 29 North. From Hyundai, it's the new Veloster. 38 miles per gallon highway. Standard BlueLink telematics with hands-free texting. The new Veloster. New thinking for the next generation of drivers. You can find out more at jimpricehyundai.com.
All right. Well, WNRN members should check your mailbox email to choose tickets and prizes from the WNRN VIP members list. You could win tickets to the Avid Brothers at Richmond International Raceway on July 25th. You can also win tickets to Eli Cook Band, Peter Bradley, Bronze Radio Return at the Southern, Crystal Bright, all kinds of bands coming up. Become a member at WNRN.org and win tickets and music every week from WNRN. You get movie tickets, all kinds of stuff. Make sure you become a VIP member. All right, back with our guest, Josh Wheeler. Josh, we got a couple left to do. We were talking about political muzzles. How about the North Carolina General Assembly?
North Carolina General Assembly passed a law. Well, let me step back and very quickly. There's a big issue about where do schools' authority over their students end? Where's this jurisdiction? So can schools punish students for off-campus speech? Well, in the old days, this was pretty easy issue, but now in the days of the internet, it gets much more difficult. There's a law in North Carolina about prohibiting online bullying, i.e. student-to-student kind of bullying. Those raise some First Amendment concerns, but depending on how it's written, it might be constitutional or not. But North Carolina went a step further. They decided that the teachers needed protection from online bullying of students. And so they revised the law so that students could no longer be bullying teachers and what print, post online, any comments or such, making it a crime.
Right. Instead of writing on the bathroom that, you know, Mrs. Smith is a jerk,
exactly.
You wrote on your Facebook page, completely different law
exactly.
being broken.
And the law is very ambiguously written, so we don't know if somebody writes something like that, so-and-so is a jerk or something, that could be interpreted as a criminal act because the statute doesn't clearly define it.
Well, we can't go into much detail on that just because, but I love this part that I believe that came from one of the North Carolina General Assembly members talking about the law is necessary to protect teachers from malicious students. Quote, these children are bright and conniving.
Yeah, that's right. What I'm imagining now is that the to-buy list at the beginning of the school year, in addition to, you know, pencils, a protractor, and such, they now need to bring bail money.
Again, Josh Wheeler talking about the 2013 muzzles. Just two left. This one was really bothersome. Not that the others haven't been, but this seemed to really stretch home things to watch your back about. U.S. Representative Doug Lamborn.
This one gets my goat. I'll try to do it very quick. He is head of a committee on energy and mineral resources in the House of Representatives. The committee invited an environmental activist to speak to them regarding the issues of mountaintop removal mining. As part of the testimony, this particular witness, whose name was Maria Gano, wanted to show a photograph of a child, a five-year-old, bathing in a bathtub in the area, and the water was all murky and polluted. But this is the best water that they had.
Right. Showing the people who were at this congressional hearing
right.
how dangerous and filthy living near mountaintop removal is.
Exactly. And if you see the photograph, there's nothing offensive. You cannot see the girl's private part. She's 5 years old, too. I mean, probably most parents have pictures of their kids in various settings like this. But anyway, not only did they refuse to allow her to show the photograph, they compared it out loud vocally to child pornography and had the Capitol Police detain her and interrogate her about the photograph as being child pornography after she testified. This is incredibly offensive, particularly because the man who approved this, who we gave the muzzle to, never saw the picture. He admitted.
When you say approved this, you mean approved haranguing the woman.
Who said, yes, I'm not going to allow this photograph to be shown, even though I've never seen it, to make a decision on that. And then approved the idea of the Capitol Police talking to this woman. And had the gall to go in and say that she needs to be careful about the kind of pictures that she's showing, when he hasn't even taken the time to view the picture himself.
And again, we talked early on about some folks receiving the muzzles discuss whether or not to change their procedures or their policies. And in this case, even though we talk about the U.S. representative who never saw the picture, again, he invited this woman as a congressional witness and then
yes.
treated her in this manner. And the quote that I found in your, again, the TJCenter.org greater discussion of all these muzzles, I'm not going to issue an apology, and I don't think the staff members involved are going to issue an apology.
Right. Not at all. Even though the Capitol Police who investigated did not file any charges against her because they looked at this and looked at the picture and such, and there's no way that this could be considered child pornography.
All right, 11:57, just a couple minutes left with our guest Josh Wheeler discussing the 2013 muzzles. Josh from the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Drew's here for Les Temps Purdue. So let's go out on a more jovial one.
Okay.
The last one left of the nine muzzles given out this year, the Idaho State Liquor Division.
Yes, the Idaho State Liquor Division. For some reason, and Idaho's not alone in this, Virginia is too, but for some reason we have given authority to alcohol beverage control boards to control what's on the label of wines and beers and zinc, so the names expression to determine if they're offensive or not. And in this case, there was a wine produced, produced a wine with the name of Five Wives Liquor. Well, the Idaho State Liquor Division determined that that might be offensive to a prominent segment of their population.
Who?
Well, they didn't specifically say, but we, of course, assume that it was the Mormon population. Now, never mind that in the state right next door, there's a much more significant Mormon population, and Five Wives Liquor is being sold there. But here they denied it on the grounds that it might be offensive. The other interesting thing here is, of course, Mormons do not drink. So it's unlikely that they're going to be offended by the name very much because they won't be coming into contact. But there also was the label was a picture of five women in sort of 19th century garb.
Right, in their petticoats. Like, think for those of us of age, think Petticoat Junction sort of stuff.
exactly. But the Idaho State Liquor Division determined that that was inappropriate because it would be offensive to the Mormon population, which, from what we could tell from what was taking place in Utah, the Mormon population could care less.
But then it went beyond the Mormons, right? When they couldn't meet that answer, then they said it would, oh, it's not that, it's that it's offensive to women.
Yes, they kept changing the rationale for the reason why they were denying this label to be sold. And then the next rationale became, oh, well, it really just wasn't a good enough quality product to do it, which just goes to show that this state institution was acting arbitrarily. And then when they were forced to justify their answer, they really couldn't come up with a good one, or certainly one that would meet constitutional requirements.
So the Idaho State Liquor Division getting a muzzle.
Right. Go to our website and look at the image and see if it offends you.
I love the, again, one of the quotes I found in the writing was, "One man's vulgarity is another's lyric."
That's my favorite First Amendment quote. It's Justice Harlan, and I think it just expresses so much about the essence of the First Amendment, which is that the value of speech is subjective, and why should one person get to decide for the rest of us?
All right, the 2013 muzzles, you can see them, www.tjcenter.org. That's the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. Our guest today, Josh Wheeler, he's the director. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you.
All right, next day, Mother's Day, next Sunday. See you then.
This has been... Wake-Up Call on WNRN. The Wake-Up Call is supported by the markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or wake